Total Tuscany Podcast, Episode 60.
I've always loved the artisan culture, the independent places, and I think it's what makes Florence so special. So what I found traveling there was no resource really sharing these more sort of off the beaten path places.
Nardia Plumridge is an Australian freelance travel and lifestyle writer. Australian by birth, Nardia is based in Florence, Italy. Her work has been published in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and several other newspapers. Nardia is the Tuscan expert for Expedia and Olive magazine in the UK. Her love affair with Florence started when she was just 15 years old and visited the city for the first time. It was then she knew she wanted to get lost in Florence. I'm Travis Justice, joined again by my co-publisher of TotalTuscany.com, Mr. Pat Capagna. Hello, Pat. How you doing?
Travis, great to be in the saddle. Looking forward to another podcast here.
You know, every time we do get to relive experiences or talk to somebody who has been living the ultimate life, whether in Tuscany or Florence, it's always good just to tell those stories. And you and I have been doing some consulting on the side with people who are getting ready to go to Tuscany, sharing our experiences, pointing them in the right direction. And that's what today's guest is all about, pointing people in the right direction to find unique experiences that they can really uncover in Florence. Because you can get caught in a tourist trap in Florence and go, well, that's not the authenticity that I was thinking of.
Well, having just come back from a group, I can tell you that having an opportunity to study up on someone's idea of an interesting day in Florence would be so helpful, right? Those guidebooks, if you just follow the guidebooks, and it's easy to get lost in the same area of the city and not venture too far off because it's a longer walk or you don't know what's over there. I'm looking forward to this next podcast.
Nardia Plumridge is a repeat guest on the Total Tuscany podcast. She joined us 4 years ago to talk about her new website, which was Lost in Florence. Today, she joins us on the Total Tuscany podcast to talk about her brand new book, which is Lost in Florence. We're going to talk about the wine, we're going to talk about the fine, and we're going to talk about the dine. It's Nardia Plumridge on the Total Tuscany podcast. Nardia, I was looking at our records, and the last time we spoke to you was May of 2015. It is now May of 2019. Why has it been so long since we've had a conversation?
That's a good question. I have no idea. I don't know where time flies, for a start. I can't believe it's been 4 years of happy living. But also a lot can happen in 4 years, can't it? Because the last time we met, or like by voice, by speaking, I just launched Lost in Florence, the website, and had a good sort of bit of feedback. And about a year old it was then. And now, look, 4 years later, we're speaking again because I now have Lost in Florence, the book.
The book. And that is now out. You've been going. I know you're in the UK. You've been promoting this book quite a bit. When you get a book that you've been working on for so long, and you get that in your hands and you feel it for the very first time, what's that feeling like? Where you're like, oh my God, I really wrote this thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very, very surreal feeling because it's always an idea, right? First and foremost, it's a dream, and it was always my dream even before the website to have a book. And then things are a bit different in the publishing industry now. So it's like, okay, well, I'll start with a website, but it was always the book dream. So when you're actually going through the process of, and it's actually been a 2-year process, just the book project, from time I actually wrote what I wanted to do with it, like the actual out and proposal, to the time it's actually come out now in Europe. Everything's done digitally these days. So you think it was written last year, it was actually submitted in June, and everything was sort of put together in July. So again, it's been quite a period of then back and forth, and then it went to print in November. So again, if you imagine, my editor was in Australia, the designer was also there, we're in different time zones, and then eventually when you get this book in your hand, it's very surreal. It is like your little baby. It's like, did I really make this? And so it's a huge sense of accomplishment, and I'm very proud of how it turned out.
Nadia, for the listeners that may not remember, since it's been rude of us not to talk to you for 4 years, how did... Tell them about Lost in Florence. You do your own research. Tell them what this is all about.
Sure. So the idea of Lost in Florence was always sort of a seed born from the idea of what I called, I wanted to sort of share the chic, boutique and unique venues in the Renaissance capital and also beyond, you know, in other places I go, but for Lost in Florence specific. I've always loved the city for so many reasons. I first was there as a 15-year-old in the 1990s and have been going regularly since the early noughties, which is about 20 years now. And I've always loved the artisan culture, the independent places. And I think it's what makes Florence so special. So what I found traveling there was no resource really sharing these more sort of off the beaten path places. Of course, there's books like Lonely Planet, who I really do admire, doing really good nuts and bolts kind of travel guides. But there was no deeper dive. We're not telling anyone, like, how do the locals live and where to really go. So, you know, when I moved there in 2012 full time, as opposed to lots of trips there, I just set up put together the idea of the website and started creating ultimately what I wanted to be a resource to share articles that were sharing, you know, stories of the people behind the places, the little independent shops. It's got three key categories on the website, which is wine, dine, and fine. So obviously wine is like eating from like sort of coffee to cocktail. Dine is the eating, and then fine is like shopping, but shopping more in an artisan way, handicrafts, and also showcasing a lot of the studios that I'm sure you guys know, having been to Florence, those wonderful little stores where, you know, at the back you've got some artisan making their craft by hand and then selling it in the shop front.
You know, the interesting part is every time we go, and we've been several times now, we always find something new. Of course, you were located there. Yes. When you're putting this book together, did you like start writing like, okay, I got to get this place in. Oh, no, I just found this place. I got to get this place. How did you decide who goes in the book?
That was a good question. The curation part was actually quite difficult because it wasn't a case of what to put in the book. It was like, what do you leave out? Because there was so much, you know, there's only so many pages you can put in there. The book's around 230 pages, so it's quite comprehensive. There's 150 or so venues in there. So really it was just doing a list of like all the venues I love and then also being quite pragmatic, like, okay, you can't have all the venues, say, in Oltrano. Like, some people are going to stay by the Duomo, some are going to be in San Lorenzo or by the train station of Santa Maria Novella. So I made sure in all the chapters there's a nice spread of wonderful venues in what I determined as the eight neighborhoods of Florence, which are all within the historic center, five on the north side and three in Oltrano. So it's really about, you know, putting together a list and then a bit of a process of elimination. But, you know, having spent many years there and, you know, living there for years too, you know, I've walked the streets, I've been into so many, well, all of the venues that are listed, I've obviously visited and eaten and drunk in, or at least shopped and visited and talked to the owners. And so basically it's 5 years of my life, 5 years of, you know, living in Florence. And so the curation part I found ultimately quite easy, but as I was saying, it wasn't a case of like, oh no, what do I do to fill it? It was more a case of who do I leave out?
Now,
sadly, maybe for book two.
be honest with me. Did you leave a few places out
Yes.
that you do not want tourists to go that you kept for yourself?
Let me think, did I? Not knowingly, but I will be honest. I have friends that sometimes will go to a place and they're like, please don't write about this. Please don't put a social media post. And that's happened to me a number of times. So I've definitely done that, like being somewhere where friends said, please don't communicate this. On a personal level, I want to share. I mean, I'm a journalist by trade. And so my kind of job has always been to discover places and share it with my readers. And so I'm not personally precious. And also, what I really want to do with this book and what it is for me is a celebration of Florence and the people that make it so special. So my desire is that people read this book, they travel to Florence, they go to these shops and they spend their like travel dollar with the locals. And so if I can bring people to these independent stores and I know that they're not only having an authentic experience, but they're giving money back to the community, that makes my heart sing and I feel like I've done my job. So I'd rather that happen, like share the wealth, so to speak, with you know, mm-hmm. with travelers and also the locals, hopefully, you know, driving income versus being precious of like, that's my place. I'm not telling anyone. I hope there's a positive effect.
I think it is. Pat and I have been going consistently since 2009, either once a year or for sure once every two years. We get the feeling that every time we go to Florence, nothing has changed even in the last 10 years. When you lived there consistently like you did for 5 years, has the city changed that much?
Look, on the facade, it hasn't changed for 500 years. You know, you have these beautiful buildings from the Renaissance, you know, from the Duomo to or the Palazzi. So that is still fixed. But if you go, again, that little deeper dive there, especially in the last 5 years, I've seen a real explosion in like concept stores, more kind of craft coffee cafes. Also contemporary art galleries have popped up if you know where to look for them. And so my book definitely celebrates not only the artisan culture and the traditions, but a lot of the contemporary artisans and other places to explore culturally. So I've definitely seen that evolve, which I find quite exciting. So it's not just a city to go and see classic art. You can do contemporary stuff, both with fashion or even food. You can find great restaurants that are still taking that really lovely sort of farm to table approach, but they're maybe doing a little bit of a twist on the traditions of a recipe that's typically Tuscan. So I think now for a traveler, it's really exciting because yes, you can go and get a bistecca and go to the Uffizi and see the David, or you can come and see some contemporary 20th century art, have some crazy pasta kind of dish that's from a new chef who's up and coming, and you know, even try some new kind of wines. Like there's a new blend of wine I discovered last year from Tuscany called Caballo. It's a combination of Cabernet and Merlot, and it's actually delicious. You know, obviously not typical Tuscan grapes, you know, they're French varieties, but you know, here you have some wonderful winemakers doing something a little bit more contemporary too. So I think it's an exciting time to visit Tuscany, and like again, if you can delve a little deeper, you can see the other layers of Florence, which make it pretty magical to discover.
Have you seen much of a change in the restaurants and in the fine dining in Florence? You know, we have tasting menus and all of that's the rage in the big cities here, but has that really evolved much in Florence?
I feel like there's still more the typical to trattoria, you know, the mama and papa joints, but you can definitely find them, you know, the Michelin star places if that's what you desire. And as I mentioned, then you've got some other restaurants that aren't Michelin but are doing something a little bit more nouveau and creative. So I've definitely seen that evolve for sure. I mean, one thing I've really noticed more in terms of a change, especially in the last 2 years, is the popularity of the city. It really feels so busy these days. And, you know, I remember when I first went there for 3 months in 2010, and it was from September to sort of early December. You definitely felt the city, you know, back in the day, you used to really get quiet around end of October. And I remember being there in November and loving it. Like the sun was shining, there was no, you know, big travel groups, and you could go to the Uffizi and almost have the place to yourself on a Sunday afternoon. Whereas now, even in like January, it's very, very busy. So the biggest change I feel is, you know, in the last couple of years is the number of travelers that are there now all year round. So, you know, back in the day, you'd say, oh, come, you know, in early spring or late autumn and or fall. Whereas now it's kind of like, gosh, it's pretty busy all year round. So if anything, you know, again, what I'm trying to do with the book is sort of say to people, if you can, and you've got the time, of course, if you haven't seen David, go see him. He's gorgeous. But also if you have time, you know, go down to the Altrano, go to these other neighborhoods, go off the beaten path, just a couple of streets away from the main, you know, main strips, and you'll be, you know, amazed at what you can discover and a more sense of peace and some really lovely places to eat and shop.
So we were there in December and we did our first Christmas basically trip to Florence, and I got to be honest with
lovely.
You. And I don't know if you were there in December, but the streets were absolutely magnificent. Even the local Florentines were saying the lights were so much different this year, strung out through the streets. But my question to you is there a time of year you like the best?
Yeah, I mean, I would always say like early spring and late fall. Probably late fall the most. Like November is still one of my favorite months because you're coming to the end of the season, even though it still can be busy. The weather's normally still quite good. It's sunny but crisp. Also, I'm a huge foodie, and it's the harvest season around then. So if you love, you know, your wine, your olive oil, your truffles, it's a really good time to visit if you're a foodie. So I would definitely say November would be one of my favorites. Or otherwise, maybe March, I would say, the times I prefer, definitely.
Wine, dine, and fine. Question for you. Mm-hmm. What was the hardest subject to write about? Was it the wine? Was it the fine? Or was it the dine?
They were all a joy, to be honest. Again, as I said, I researched for years, and to be honest, it was actually really easy to write because, again, the concept and all the creative was done like over years. So it was really sitting down, doing that list, putting out the plan with all the chapters, which had already been done in the proposal, and then just literally getting on and writing it. So, and again, because I know the venues well and I know the people behind them, it was really just sitting down at a computer and like sort of banging it out. And I'm happy to say it was not really hard to write. Like I literally had that kind of Angela Lansbury, like, moment, I call it. You know, Murder, She Wrote from the 80s, that film, you know, that TV series. And at the beginning, she's on the typewriter just going crazy. It kind of just came. It just sort of came out. And so I found it quite easy. But in terms of the most joyous thing to write, actually, for me, is there's some itineraries there. There's 4-day itineraries for Florence. And they were really fun to do. So I've themed them. And there's one on a sunny day, a rainy day, Florence for foodies and Florence for fashionistas. And that was just really fun to do. So literally, it's like 8 a.m., you know, suggesting where to go for breakfast. And it literally does a whole day. And it's a realistic day and it's a realistic walk. It gives you even the details of the street. So turn left here and go here. So if someone was traveling in Florence and had a day or two, they could literally spend the day following my itinerary guides, or you can just pick and choose bits out of it that seem interesting. Were really fun to do.
I'm going to be honest with you. I hear you say the word research, and all I hear is you got to eat, drink, and shop for 5 years.
Yeah, I know. And I'm trying to make it sound professional. Come on, guys. Look, this is one of the, you know, the hideous, obviously, what's it like, occupational hazards of being a travel journalist is I have to research. I was very fortunate and have been fortunate to explore many places in the world, but spent lots of time in Florence. And, you know, I remember being there in the early days of just still having these big eyes of awe and wonder of like turning a corner and discovering something new and popping into these places. And yeah, I mean, I still have that kind of passion for it, which I write in the introduction. The introduction is a little like a postcard, like, because I'm a huge postcard fan still today to send them off. And I sort of talk a bit about the concept and my love of Florence and how even today it still feels very ignited, you know, even after sort of 20 years. So I know you guys feel the same about Tuscany, right? Which is why you do this lovely podcast. There's something about it. Italy, but Tuscany and Florence particularly, that has some sort of magic and it draws you in, it lures you back. And I think a lot of it's to do with the people. A lot of it's to do just with the culture there, and even the weather and the architecture. It's just, yeah, there's no place like it, really. I see why people love Italy so much. I'm one of them.
Nardia, was there anything about Florence that surprised you when putting this project, this massive project together, something that you hadn't really thought about before preparing this book?
Oh, it's a good question. I don't think so. I feel like I know the city pretty well. And because it was my idea and I put together the concept, you know, I was putting together what I felt I wanted to share with readers. So, you know, even in, there's a section called 9, which is my listicles. So there's like 9, what I suggest for gelati and pizza and trattoria. But also I want to put in there, for example, green spaces, because having lived in Florence, you know, it's quite, you know, it's a very stone city, you know, especially in the hot weather, like you really crave a green space. So I was like, I want to sort of share where some great places to go just for a little bit of a respite to the hot weather or just to get some greenery. And again, I also have a 9 beauty, which is, again, if you're traveling, I don't know if you've ever found this, could be more female versus male, but it's places to go to, you know, get your hair cut and get your nails done and get a massage after, you know, getting off an aeroplane. So those kind of things kind of came through. But in terms of Florence, I don't feel anything really surprised me so much, just having spent so much time there, really.
Do you find yourself, you know, when you live near the mountains or you live near the ocean, you become kind of desensitized to the beauty of the place? Do you find yourself becoming a little desensitized to the magnificence of this city?
You know, personally, no, but maybe it's because I wasn't originally born there. But I will say, like, Italian friends over the years have always kind of, I wouldn't say mock me, but like, they would sort of say, you know more about, you know, Italy or Florence than we do, and we're from here. And I was always thinking, well, that's probably because I'm not from here, so I'm so engaged with it. So I want to read up on the history and I want to explore all the streets. And, you know, many years ago, actually, when I first went to Florence, I did a freelance work as a tour guide doing country tours, and I loved it because I had to learn all the history about Tuscany and Siena and San Gimignano and the wine region. And I would love to share the stories, you know, with my clients. And, then I would tell my friends all these stories, and they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, this is your history. They're like, how come you know more than, you know, I do? So on a personal level, no, I still find it really magical, and I don't get desensitized. But maybe if you're born there, you're just like, yeah, this is what we know, these old buildings. Whereas I grew up in Australia by the beach with, like, nothing old. So for me, Europe is just a fascination, which is why, you know, I've spent so much time of my adult life there.
You know, as we were lining up this podcast, I'm going to be honest with you, Nadia, you made my day and you made Pat's day because as you were corresponding, you shared an email with us that somebody had reached out to you from listening to our podcast from 4 years ago. You know, Pat and I sit in the studio and we put it out in the world and we don't get much feedback. We're always wondering, okay, are we just talking to ourselves or is this just a little hobby? And you made you made our day by at least saying, hey, somebody listened to this and reached out to me because of that podcast.
I know. Isn't that great? Well, I'm happy to share with you because I know how much passion it takes to put projects like yours together as well. Like all of us who are creatives and do this for passion, it's not something that just sort of happens. And no, it was lovely. And isn't it timely too? Like, I got that email a couple of weeks ago from that gentleman. And then, you know, we're talking today, but no, it shows that people love, you know, Italy, they want to travel and they, you know, want to find great content like you're creating, authentic content. So it's nice to know that, you know, people are listening and then also then taking the time to write. That's what I always find fascinating because I've had also some really nice feedback from the book. And what's really humbling is like, people haven't just bought the book. They've read it, liked it so much. They've found me online, found my email and actually bothered to write a message. So that to me is quite a few steps to get there. So it makes it feel all worthwhile. So, and I hope you guys feel the same about your podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do. We do. And we just love talking to people, whether they're in Florence or business owners in Tuscany, because it really connects us with the region and with people. And when we visit them, it's so much, it's such a, like a family that they welcome us. You mentioned the book and getting the book. Where can, well, most of our listeners are from the United States. Where can people get the book? Is it all online or is it in stores here?
It's in stores too. So it really depends on where you are in the States, but online, the most easy resource is amazon.com. You'll find it there in the book section. But there are different stores. It really depends on what state you're in because there's a lot of independent stores that stock it. So yeah, I would definitely say just go online. And that's the easiest sort of resource. If people want to, they can also check on my website, www.lostinflorence.it. I have an article about the book, which also features a bit more info on the pages and the chapters. And I've got a few screen grabs of different pages as well. Just have a little bit of a look and feel. And there's some links below that at the end of the article that have the Amazons, but other countries through Europe, Australia, and that kind of thing. So yeah, it really depends on the territory. So it has got some what they call an international worldwide release. So it's out of Australia, North America, Canada, and Europe. But then depending on countries, I had someone from Brazil write to me the other day and say, how can I get the book? So I was just like, can you get it from Amazon in the States? And she was like, yep. So that's great. So I have to thank Amazon on that level. They make things a little bit easier these days.
Excellent. And we'll put a link to the to the Amazon link as well in our podcast. What's next? Where do you get lost at next?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? Well, look, I'll be honest. When I first started the idea of the Lost In, it was going to be more than Florence. It was like going to be Lost In, whatever city I was in. So obviously it made sense when I was working on the idea in 2012 to do Florence. But now it feels naturally, again, with my life evolving, just to be like lost in the city. So my idea moving forward is to do the same concept of like the independent artisan stores, the Chic Boutique Unique, and do lostinthecities.com, which I have and I'm developing. And actually, funnily enough, the idea is to be a podcast where I actually reach out and go to a different city each week. I'm the traveler in chief and I meet some local who's doing something more of an insider kind of job in their own city and they'll share their boutique and, you know, chic places in a wine, dine, fine category and talk about tips and trends. And also I'm really into some slow tourism, slow travel and sustainable travel. And that's something I really want to focus on and discuss with people around the world. When you travel, how can you have more authentic experience? How can you meet the locals? And how can you also give your travel dollar back to the local community? So that's something I want to focus on. So yeah, so on a personal level, I just want to sort of like share the concept and go a bit more broad because I can't be everywhere in the world. But then on a personal level, like with a website like Lost in the Cities, it's like wherever I am, it could be in Florence, it could be London, like I was recently, it could be Bangkok, it could be Australia, it could be Bali, that I can share those independent places I'm discovering and hopefully, you know, share that with the readers and the listeners.
It's a wonderful,
so that's me next.
It's a wonderful concept. And let me say that Travis and I will offer our services next time you want to be lost anywhere. We will be there.
Lovely.
We'll get lost with you.
Well, that's cool. And well, I have to be like lost in Nebraska, right? I think that you guys are going to be my guys. So,
hey, trust me, it's absolutely easy to get lost in Nebraska. I mean, you'd be like, where the hell am I? I mean, there's nothing here.
Well, that's another reason I need people like you, because if you've got the local person on the ground doing great stuff like you're doing, you're going to know that this place is great for coffee and this person's baking amazing cakes, and you'll know all the independent places to share, you know, and that's what it's all about. Because again, as we're talking about with Florence, but even other cities, you know, having traveled so much, it's really easy to get like stuck in the tourist sort of traps. And unless you've really these days got a little bit of guidance, I think you could have a horrible experience and not really see the true beauty of a city. And I even had that last year with my auntie who was in Florence, and she saw the two sides, one with a tour group there for the day and had a really sort of average experience and thought it was horrible. Then met me for dinner that night and I showed her my sort of lost in version, and she was just, her eyes were awakened to the beauty of what the city really holds. So yeah.
Did I read on LinkedIn today or Facebook that your book is going to be picked up by an Italian publisher?
Yes. Yeah. I just found that out yesterday, that the book has been acquired by a really reputable Italian publisher that's been around since the 1850s or 1840s. And they're going to translate it into Italian, which I'm hugely excited about and very honored by, because if you think about it, I'm writing about an Italian city being a foreigner, even though a passionate one, with authenticity. So for this company to actually like the project so much and believe in the content and the quality is like very humbling. So yes, it is being translated into Italian, actually to come out in spring 2020. So again, in the book world, they really work quite far in advance, but yeah, I'm really honored that that's going to come out in that language. And then hopefully maybe others would follow. It'd be kind of nice to see it in different languages just for the giggles, even though I can't read, you know, too many languages. I'd like to see it like Chinese and like German would be fun, or maybe Korean, something crazy. It'd be kind of fun. Japanese.
How many people are still like you, maybe from Australia, the UK, or even the US? How many expats are there in Florence? Is there a pretty large community there?
There is quite a large community. I don't know in terms of numbers, but there's always been a huge expat community in Italy and Florence for hundreds of years. I mean, if you look back at even the historic, you know, look at books like Room with a View, and you can see all the characters, you know, even back in the 19th century, like people living there and just loving Italy. On a personal level, having spent, you know, lots of years there, there's wonderful creative groups and wonderful groups. Like the British Institute, for example, is a wonderful organization. It's 100 years old. And even if you're traveling there on a short time now, you can go and get a short-term membership and go to the library, go to their special events. They also have courses for English language and art history. There's other cultural groups like the Creative People in Florence who put together these lovely like events if you love the art world. There's even an Australian group, people in Florence who meet once a month for dinner, which is really fun. And so there's just loads of avenues just to be, you know, to meet people, expats, which I've always found really, really lovely. Like I found it really easy to meet people in Florence and just have a really good time. There's women groups, there's all sorts. So yeah, there's still quite an avid group of people there. Some people living full time. There's quite a few people that live there part time. So they'll come a few times a year. Maybe spend six months, or three months. But I think that's what makes the city so special too, like just a really nice influx of people who are passionate about Italy and art and culture and like to live that little La Dolce Vita kind of life.
It's funny that you say that. I just took a tour group over and came back a few weeks ago, and I like to get some feedback from my groups. And one of the things that they said was that Florence seemed so welcoming. And it didn't matter where they were from. Very accepting. The word was very accepting of them as tourists, as travelers.
Yeah.
And that's a, I think that's a feeling that we all necessarily experienced, but probably didn't identify before.
I mean, I find the Italian people are so friendly and so welcoming. And if you can just be, as any country, I think a little respectful to know just a couple of words, it will go a really long way. So just to learn the kind of, you know, buongiornos and grazie or a few little things in between is really helpful. But I've always found, even when I was learning Italian language in 2010, you know, if you just try that little bit, they're always so helpful. Not like some other countries, they make you feel a little bit silly. They will always, you know, help you with the language. And, you know, that's where the arm gestures come in too, just to try to make your way into terms of communicating. But no, I've always found it very welcoming, both from the Italians, but also the expat community. So again, that's probably another reason it just feels so wonderful to be there.
Lost in Florence is the book. You could purchase it at Amazon.com. LostInFlorence.it is the website. Lots of good content is there as well. Nardia Plumridge has been our guest on the Total Tuscany podcast. Nardia, let's not make it 4 years again, okay? We have to do this more often.
Okay, promise. Absolutely, absolutely. So we'll make sure we stay in touch. And hopefully, yeah, we can meet next time you're over and, you know, have a little aperitivo or more.
She's so passionate about Florence. And if you see the cover of the book, which you can see on our webpage right here on TotalTuscany.com, and see some of the pictures, Nardia really captures the essence of what is unique about Florence. And what I like about her, she's looking for the unique places, the mom and pop shop. She's really about finding the authenticity of Florence.
Yeah, that just comes straight through. It's not just it's the off the beaten path, yes, but she's interested in making certain that those mom and pop places thrive, and those artistic shops that we know of all over Florence thrive, and it's amazing. She's obviously a brilliant writer.
She also motivated me in a different way though, and Nardia, thank you for doing this because it made me realize maybe we take even where we live right now for granted. Maybe we should do a better job finding unique, chic places in our own places. And think about where you live right now. Do you tend to go to the chain stores? Do you tend to go to the mall? Or do you tend to find yourself going to a local place that's been around for a while, or just a small business that is doing things maybe the non-traditional way? Because a lot of places just popped in my mind. Like, you know, maybe I'm going to go there tomorrow for breakfast because I know they're a mom and pop shop, and I just haven't been there for a while because it might be a little bit too far away. It might be off the beaten path a little bit, and it's time to even take the road less traveled in the cities that we live.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, Nardia comes at this from an outside perspective, and you can tell she really appreciates where she's been.
Absolutely. Make sure to follow Total Tuscany on all our social media channels. You can follow us on Facebook, or rather like us at Facebook, at Total Tuscany. You can follow us on Twitter, at Total Tuscany, and we're also on Instagram, at Total Tuscany. For Mr. Pat Capagna, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Total Tuscany podcast. We'll see you next time as we talk more about the region we love so much and love to talk about, Tuscany. See you next time.